Hello, and welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. It's the Monday Pickups edition, a highly collectible edition of this podcast. You're joining us at the right time. Andy Behrens here in your ears on a Monday afternoon. I'm with multi-sport fantasy legend Scott Pianowski. We are fresh off a full serving of opening week NFL matchups. It was a glorious Sunday for the most part. First, before we get into it and before I engage with Scott, a little bit of pre-show business. You all can still sign up for a Yahoo Fantasy League at sports.yahoo.com/fantasy. You are encouraged to do so. If you're 0-1 in your main fantasy league right now, for goodness sakes, get another team. Also, consider signing up for Yahoo Fantasy Plus. Take it for a test drive with a free trial. You're going to get all sorts of research tools, all sorts of data there that's unavailable to non-plus players. Enjoy the newsletter that I lovingly craft for you each week. That is yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. Oh, that's the corporate propaganda out of the way, Scott. How are you?
I'm great. It was a fun week one. I got, you know, there's some hits, there's some misses. Overall, I feel like enough went right that I don't, you know, I'm not filled with self-loathing that you can have when a week doesn't go your way. It was fun. Fun to have the game back. Fun to see people in the crowd, which I enjoyed. The NFL is the biggest behemoth in the sports world, so let's enjoy it.
Yeah, crowd noise was a thing. Crowd noise was like legitimate, real crowd noise, not fake crowd noise. That was kind of fun to experience.
Also, again. I always find it fascinating when a crowd is not the home crowd, right? Where, you know, which way is the crowd leaning? Who is in these seats, right? I think it's fascinating. I remember the Chargers when they played in San Diego, and producer John will remember this quite well. There would just be like a Monday night Pittsburgh Chargers game was like, you know, basically a Steelers home game. It was just embarrassing that 85% of the fans were there for Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh travels really well, and some teams do, but it's fun to see which way the crowd's going. Or sometimes I see this a lot in NHL game 7, where a home team will come out a little flat and the crowd gets so tight and there's so much nervous energy. I actually think it's a detriment to be the home team in that instance, because crowds matter. It's the emotional effect that a crowd has on a game is a tangible thing. I mean, it's hard to actually.
It is a pretty well studied matter, and it definitely can affect officiating across all sports, but not equally across all sports. So it is definitely a thing. I'm super anxious, actually. Not that we need to go too far down this tangent, but I am really anxious to see how things play out in Vegas, right? Which is going to be such a destination for visiting, even fan bases that don't necessarily always travel are probably going to want to travel to Vegas. I can't wait to see how many Baltimore fans are going to be there on Monday night. I feel like that's going to be it. But they're also Raiders fans, right? And Raiders fans travel really well too, and they're a very loyal group.
Well, remember the Vegas hockey team went to the NHL finals as an expansion team, which is just a monumental accomplishment. Yeah. I think if they had won the Stanley Cup, maybe they would have done a documentary about that already. Although maybe there's one out there, but yeah, Vegas is a great, it's just great. Look, I feel bad that the Raiders aren't in Oakland. I feel bad the Chargers aren't in San Diego, but Vegas always was a good destination for a team. It makes sense. And now we have some franchises in Vegas, and I'm looking forward to this game. This will be one of the few times all year I'll be on the Raiders. And after a 1-3 start to the darts, if you want, you know, we're going to do some of P&L right, P&L wrong, Barron's right, Barron's wrong. Whenever my picks go 1-3, I cannot be satisfied. The Patriots outplayed the Dolphins, didn't cover. So, you know, no ticket at the window. And thankfully, your Bears came through for me by losing to the Rams. But I need the Raiders tonight.
The Bears had exactly the game that we should have forecast for them, like down to the, down to the absolute stat.
Maybe they wanted it, right? Just throw out Dalton, have a mediocre game, lose, and let's get this Justin Fields thing going.
Yeah, well, we still have to get the Andy Dalton revenge game against Cincinnati out of the way. And then once we're past that, I'm hopeful that we're going to see a little more Justin Fields. You alluded to it. We're going to get to key injuries from opening week and our recommended pickups in just a few minutes. But just right here, top of the show, give me one big thing that you got right about opening week. It could be a team. It can be a player. It could be a broadcaster. I don't care. It could be anything about opening week that you got right. And then just give me one big thing that you got wrong.
First, I don't know how to count, so I'm going to give you two things. Corey Davis is my most owned receiver. I feel great about that. End sentence. I also thought that the Niners had an excellent chance to be the biggest gap between great real-life team and unbelievably annoying fantasy team. And look, I know worried about Shanahan isn't exactly a new take, but Kyle Shanahan is really the most dangerous person in fantasy because he's a brilliant coach who can get production out of almost anybody. And he has no incentive to tell us things like, oh, Trey Sermon might not play this week. Oh, Brandon Ayuk may be in the doghouse. I don't know anybody who was aware of those things. I feel lucky that I don't have a lot of Ayuk, because I just thought him and Deebo Samuel were so close in ability level. I would always take the more ADP inexpensive Samuel. But this is a team that I think could go to the Super Bowl. And as much as we're going to talk up one of their running backs this week, we're going to have a lot of discussions on this Monday pod that are around this backfield. This is going to be, there's going to be several different players who go for $107 and a touchdown on this team, because that's just the way it's designed to be. As far as things I got wrong, I feel like I owe an apology to Hockenson and Swift. I was worried that they were great players, but Detroit would hold them down because the receiver room was so bad. Maybe they wouldn't move the ball. Well, maybe the really bad receiver room just means that people like Hockenson and Swift touch the ball more. They were a garbage time, legendary team in the second half of that game against the Niners. I also am crafting a handwritten apology to Sean Payton as we speak. And I think I may have overestimated how much Cliff Kingsbury could maybe hurt that Arizona offense. Kyler Murray was a fun player for 2 years. What if he's actually a better passer this year? He could be MVP Kyler Murray.
To your point about Detroit, I feel like that way, and I, you know, this is such damning with faint praise, because the whole NFC North was horrible, right? The NFC North didn't get a win in opening week, but man, Detroit was frisky. I feel like they played as well as certainly any team in the division. They were the only team, you know, I'm thinking of them, looking at you, Bears and Packers. They were the only team that didn't close in like a gutless fashion. And if you think about the way that start would have gone in the Matt Patricia era, it doesn't end like that. It doesn't end in a one score game with Detroit driving, right? Like, they gave themselves a chance to actually force overtime in that thing. So that was pretty fun to see. Jared Goff with a wild game, full of mistakes, 57 pass attempts, 32 of them go to running backs or tight ends. He still had the sort of average depth of target that you would expect from Jared Goff in the Rams years, because they didn't go to the receivers at all. There's no receiver coming out of a 57 attempt game who had more than like six targets. So there's not even anybody to add. So that was pretty wild. I would list the one thing that I felt really strongly about and had a huge fantasy investment in going into the season as the, you know, I have a lot of the Eagles stack of Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith. In fact, there are very few leagues in which I do not have Devontae Smith on a roster, simply because I probably had him 10 spots higher than consensus. And that made all the difference when it was time to choose a, let's say, sixth round wide receiver or running back. I was just always going Devontae Smith. So that worked. Hurts was, listen, I don't want to overhype it, because it was what we expect to be the easiest matchup in fantasy, right? If you get Atlanta's defense on the schedule, you got to crush it. And he absolutely did. He completed 77% of his throws. He still gave us the 60 plus rushing yards. It was everything that you want out of Hurts. So that was absolutely great to see. Really encouraging performance from him. Good performance from Smith and all that. As for things I got wrong, you already mentioned the Niners. I think I got everything wrong about the Niners. I don't think there's one aspect of the Niners that I predicted well going into the season. Ayuk obviously was leapfrogged somewhere along the way in the receiving hierarchy, right? There was a kind of, I don't want to say murky comments after the game, but it was, they left open the possibility that this is related to the injury that he had over the final couple weeks in the preseason. But his role was severely diminished. Deebo Samuel suddenly goes downfield. Like, he was a guy who had I think his intended air yards per target last year were like two, literally like two. It was at the bottom of the league. And it was a totally respectable eight something in the opener. So Deebo was a completely different receiver, had the running back room all wrong, you know, except for Mostert at the top. And we'll get into that in a little bit. That didn't work out, as often happens. If you would have told me going into the game that a Niners rookie running back was going to blow up, I would have known exactly what to do. And I would have been wrong. Right. Like, we got the wrong guy. So the Niners surprised me in every possible way. And it feels like maybe it was a failure of reporting, right? Like, how did we get so many things about this team wrong? But you think about that. And then I really believe that it was just because our sole focus with that team was the quarterback situation and who was going to start and how much Lance are we going to see, that perhaps we just ignored every other aspect.
Well, I would also say it's a disclosure issue, because Kyle Shanahan's just not going to tell you, right? I mean, it's never been harder. You and I both have work, newspaper work in our backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We've been in locker rooms and stuff. And we're at a time now where the reporters have never had less access than they do right now. And the teams and players have never had more agency in getting their message out directly to the consumer and skipping the middleman, skipping the reporter. And then, the nuanced relationships that are often a part of that, that's really changed. And just appreciate it. When you have a coach like Shanahan, there's no incentive to tell the truth about any of this stuff anyway. Right. How does it ever help a football team? That's why I always appreciate it when somebody like Mike Tomlin will be very forthcoming with injuries or maybe usage expected, because you can take what Tomlin says pretty much at face value. Just one other thing I want to say that made me feel good before we go into the pickups, which is why people are here. I attacked in the fourth and fifth round a lot of receivers who were tied to narrow usage trees. You guys on the Rams, guys on the Seahawks, yep. guys on the Vikings. And, I just feel like Thielen and Lockett were mispriced all summer. And they're going to, is Adam Thielen going to score 14 touchdowns? Probably not. But because he scores short touchdowns and has great rapport with Kirk Cousins, I don't see why he can't score 10 or 11. Tyler Lockett, I have him just about everywhere I could get him. And the Rams guys, they did throw to maybe more of their secondary guys than I expected. But Matthew Stafford was in a bad relationship. I'm just glad to see Matthew Stafford in a very healthy, fulfilling relationship now.
Yeah, Kupp was targeted 10 times. Kupp was great. I think you're right to call this out. I actually think that sometimes when everybody with a fantasy platform is screaming touchdown regression on a guy, that guy ends up being a really good value, right? Like, I mean, fine. We all expect Adam Thielen to regress a little bit in terms of touchdowns, but what if he only scores 8? Like, okay, he dialed it back. He's still a terrific fantasy asset, and he's one of two receivers that they're going to throw to over the balance of the year.
The key is regression starts the conversation. It is a starting point. It's not an ending point. That's the takeaway there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get into pickups again. It's the reason that people are here. I will try to go through what we know about injuries at the start of each position. Honestly, at running back, it's not that messy in terms of injuries, but the Raheem Mostert situation is probably the worst of them. Man, he was going to have a good day. 2 carries, 20 yards, looks great, looks like Mostert. We'd even talked on Fantasy Football Live coming into the day, as we learned that Trey Sermon wasn't going to be active, and so there wasn't, there wasn't that worry. I was trying to find a way to move Mostert up into my top 10, top 12, right? It just seemed like such an obvious blow-up spot, and it would have been based on the results that we saw from rookie Elijah Mitchell, right? It would have been a huge spot for Mostert. He would have had at least the stat line, I think, that Mitchell did. But he has a knee injury now. Again, we're speaking on Monday afternoon. Don't know the full diagnosis, full status. It's not believed to be an ACL. So, hopefully Mostert gets back out there. He's still the presumptive lead back here. But we got to talk about the 6th-round rookie out of Louisiana, a raging Cajun, Elijah Mitchell. I don't want to oversell him. I don't know that he looked spectacular. His long touchdown was not untouched, but it was close to untouched, right? It was certainly a play on which Mostert scores and probably scores untouched. But he was good. Like, it seems pretty clear that if you give Mitchell a little bit of a runway, if you're not hitting him behind the line of scrimmage, which is probably not going to happen often in this offense, like, he's decisive and he was fine. So he goes over 100 yards. He played almost exactly the role that I think we would have expected from Mostert. I think he's probably going to be everyone's priority here, but it's a Kyle Shanahan backfield. It's a Shanahan backfield generally. They got a lot of guys. Jamichael Hasty played. Trey Sermon, we have to assume, even though, like, one of the key takeaways from what Shanahan was saying following the game was that this wasn't like a secret injury with Trey Sermon. He just got outplayed by these guys. So he was legitimately something like 4th on the depth chart. Right. So that is one of the most important pieces of information that we have here, is that Mitchell and Hasty are actually ahead of him. But still, it's Shanahan. We worry about this. Other names that I mentioned in the pickups column, Mark Ingram, he saw 26 carries, and it's really hard not to add a guy who sees 26 carries, even if he's Mark Ingram. Kenneth Gainwell, Tony Jones, James White is available in 2/3 of leagues, which is a little bit surprising to me. How do you rate them all? How do you prioritize them?
Yeah, Mitchell has to be the number one guy for obvious reasons, but he's somebody, you have to tell this. You have to fit into your context and what your needs are and what your roster looks like and what the fab habits are of your league. But I feel like I'm going to be a competitive Mitchell bidder. I'm not going to be a shove everybody out of the way. I have to win this. I don't care if I go bankrupt on it. I'm just going to be competitive, and I'll let the room push me where I need to go in most situations. Cause I just feel like some weeks, maybe out of nowhere, Hasty will get 15 carries, and some weeks Sermon will get into the mix, and Wilson will come back off his injury at some point. Mike Shanahan said there's not going to be a hierarchy with the running backs. They're not going to make somebody they're not going to play to a role and say, okay, this is the guy. And so every week, I think we're going to have to, you know, Mitchell, we can now give a projectable floor to next week, but it's a week by week thing with the Niners. Again, if your running back room fit a certain, maybe you lost Gus Edwards a week ago, right? Maybe you're still stinging from that. So you may have to be more aggressive with something like this. I'm not afraid to be proactive with Mitchell, but it's not going to be, I have to have him. I generally don't, the have to have pickups are usually not my guys anyway. I think you have to learn how to buy at the bottom of the market or buy a week early on players. That's how you become a good player. You know, Mark Ingram, you get the overwhelming amount of work. And remember, goal line carries are like save opportunities in baseball. You convert one, they give you another one. They just, you know, they want to go with something that works. The coaches want to have a button that works, a big red button, and they push it. And, you know, Andy, I have no proof of this, but every skill player who switched to a single digit, I'm convinced looked better yesterday. Mark Ingram, 3.1 yards a carry, whatever. He's in the end zone a couple times. Sterling Shepard, I'm convinced, you know, is all of a sudden this twitchy, uncoverable receiver wearing number 3, where he was just a good player wearing number 87. And maybe the Texans, it's hard to know what to take when you beat up a Jaguars team that might be pretty lousy. Maybe Urban Meyer was just a big mistake. But maybe the Texans can just be a mediocre 5-12, 6-11, 4-13 team rather than the lookout below 1-16 team. I think most people expected 1 or 2 win team. If they can be a competitive football team, at least give us a handful of guys that go into the usable player pool, that's a big win for fantasy. I'm excited about Tony Jones because as great as Kamara is, he's still somebody who has to have a touch cap. There'll be every once in a while out of nowhere, he'll have like a 24 touch game. And then out of nowhere, he'll have like an 11 touch game. They are going to have a role for another running back. I think it could be Tony Jones. You got to remember with James White, he's all low floor. There's no upside here. I realize there's some fumble shaming going on with a couple of different players and they're going to use different guys, but there's no scenario where the Patriots want James White to be their, you know, de facto lead back. He's always going to be a base player on this offense. So that's all you need. If you're just looking to fill out that what the heck flex, as Sigmund Bloom would say, White can be that guy. Just remember, he's never going to be somebody you're going to start every week without any reservation. There's just going to be too many moving parts of that offense.
Yeah, I feel the same way with White. He's obviously PPR, full PPR is friendliest format. And he's a guy that gets you through bye weeks. He's not a guy that I would ideally start almost anywhere in week 2 when virtually the entire league is available to me. He's probably more of a bench guy that, again, you're using to sort of guide you through the byes. The other name that I thought was interesting, not overwhelmingly interesting, and this is going to be one aspect of the Eagles that I'm a little bit wrong on, is I didn't think that Kenneth Gainwell was going to have much of a role this early in the season. I wasn't as sold on him as many others were off the collegiate work. I had assumed that Boston Scott would retain that sort of supporting back behind Miles Sanders situation, and that's just plainly Gainwell. Now he saw double digit touches, found the end zone. Like, Gainwell isn't necessarily gonna challenge Miles. I still think that Miles Sanders does almost everything better than Gainwell, although I can't really defend Sanders over the last, this past preseason and then last season. He just had some nasty drops. So perhaps he's not the receiver that I thought he was going to be coming out of school. He had a good rookie year in that department, but not so much last year. Gainwell is pretty clearly going to be, if not a threat to him, he's going to be somebody that we can think of in the flex conversation as we get into the buys. I don't know what to make of Tony Jones, because I actually have Tony Jones and drafted him in almost all of my deep leagues. If it's a league of 14 teams and greater, I've probably got Tony Jones. The logic behind that was, hey, if this is the new Latavius Murray, Latavius was always getting 150 to 160 touches, and I'll take that in a Sean Payton offense. That seems like a layup to me. He got just barely sprinkled in with Kamara for most of this game until it was just time to run the clock out against Green Bay. So I might have liked to see a little bit more Tony Jones while this game was still competitive. Not that it was competitive for long, but I'm still interested in the player. He carries 11 times for 50 yards, and that ain't bad.
I just look at Kamara getting 20 carries. I don't think there's any scenario where the Saints want him to go over 300 for the season. I also should mention Jalen Hurts is somebody that if we talked 3-4 months ago, I would have very confidently projected that he would have been my most rostered quarterback. And based on some tea leaves, and then they did trade late in the summer for Minshew, who I think is a really good backup, although maybe he'll never be really good enough to be a starter. He kind of feels like a new version of Ryan Fitzpatrick, which we may need now that the old version of Ryan Fitzpatrick is hurt. I started backing off Hurts and getting a little bit more nervous of Hurts. And then I started to think, oh, well, I really like the Tom Brady setup. And I really like the Matthew Stafford setup, even though those guys don't run. So I'm probably a little underweight on Hurts. I probably don't have him even in a proportionate share of leagues. I feel like right now that's a gigantic mistake, because what I like about Hurts is that he can be a great fantasy factor when he plays well. He can also be a fantasy factor when he doesn't play well, because he's going to run proactively. And if he's going to throw the ball as well as he did yesterday, I feel you made a great call on Devonta Smith. He was somebody I was nervous about. I was petrified to draft Dallas Goedert to the point I thought he was one of the worst values on the board. He did score in week one, made me look bad. I guess this is a roundabout way of just addressing your Gainwell point, where I feel like this is an offense that I was walking away from. I wasn't sure about the coaching staff. And hey, right now the Eagles are 1-0. This is a division up for grabs. The Giants obviously have all sorts of problems. Dallas won one Thursday without winning, in the sense that I thought their offense looked really good, but their defense can't stop anything. Washington's already lost their quarterback, although no shame in losing to a good Chargers team. I think Philadelphia I expected them to be the worst team in this division. And I feel like last year, remember, the NFC East was a mess all year, and the Eagles were the favorite for most of that season, and then they ended up kind of collapsing. And I think I just buried this team when I shouldn't have. I want to be open-minded to Gainwell, because I think he played enough and well enough that if anything ever happened to Sanders, we could give Gainwell like a running back 16, like ranking right out of the box.
Absolutely.
Guys like that should be rostered pretty much in every medium and deep league.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. I guess the as you're discussing Hurts there, the one thing that shook me about Hurts was I think it was with like a week to go before the regular season start. Like I was drafting him a lot. I was very confident in him, again, because of the rushing floor and the improvement in the receiving core. It was like a week ahead of the regular season that they actually formally announced him as the starter. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, really? We like we hadn't settled that yet. That was still OK. I don't think I'd realized that that had not actually been uttered, that had not been spoken into existence until we were right on the brink of the regular season. I was like, OK, because obviously they flirted with Deshaun Watson trades throughout the summer. And I got to say, I didn't really regard Minshew as a huge threat. If that was the resolution to the months long flirtation with a Watson deal, then I felt fine about it. But I don't think I'd recognized that they had not actually announced him as the starter until that late in the game.
Well, maybe Joe Flacco was having that kind of a camp that they needed to leave that as open-ended as long as they could.
All right, let's transition to the wide receivers. We did have a couple of meaningful injuries here. Obviously, Michael Gallup in the Thursday night game checked out with a calf injury. Hopefully that's not too serious, isn't a multi-week thing. Jerry Jeudy is going to be a multi-week thing. And it looked worse than the reports would suggest now. It looked like it had the potential to be a season ender. So is merely a high ankle sprain. That's a weird thing to say, because a high ankle sprain is generally multiple weeks, and also with the potential to compromise a player when they attempt to return from it, right? So this could be half a season or so before we get like the version of Jerry Jeudy that we really expect. So that's a worry. The guys that I wrote about in the pickups column as potential pickups, and I don't know that I'll separate one of them, because Shepherd. Yeah, I'll separate Shepherd here. I think he's probably the priority. There's obviously a comfort level with his quarterback. He caught his quarterback's only touchdown, and Shepherd had to do most of the heavy lifting on that touchdown as well. It was a great play. He saw the targets. He was very impressive both in the preseason and here in opening week. 7.5 targets per game last year as well. So the volume is definitely there. We have a lot of questions about the offense, but I think he is the pretty clear priority. And I will also say that I feel like in most leagues, Cole Beasley is probably gone if you're in a larger competitive league. But he is actually like 45% rostered, which makes the cut for this podcast and makes the cut for the pickups column. I think we all understand that he had in some ways a bizarre offseason, right? He's made a lot of it. He's brought a lot of attention onto himself for some of the strangest reasons. And he does happen to be in a position because of his vaccination status that, you know, there's a greater likelihood that he has to miss a game or two. And obviously people are worried about that. But I mean, for goodness sakes, he just got targeted 13 times by Josh Allen. He's a guy coming off a huge year. When he plays, he's a good bet for 10 targets every week and like 8 catches. And, you know, like it's a numbers game. And whatever you think of Cole Beasley, the individual, he deserves a spot in most fantasy leagues. I think I was a little surprised to see his roster percentage as low as it is. Other names that I mentioned, and hey, there's a whole bunch of directions you can take this and a whole bunch of wide receivers you could talk about. But I'm super interested in Rondale Moore. I like everything I saw out of him. Nelson Agholor found the end zone. Tim Patrick found the end zone. He's a guy that we talked about virtually every pickups podcast last year, and people never came around to it. Patrick and KJ Hamler could both benefit in terms of snaps and targets from the Jerry Jeudy situation. Christian Kirk is always difficult because every time he scores touchdowns, we rush out and add him, and then he has a quiet week immediately thereafter. Although, it's the Cardinals. Murray looked fantastic. The entire offense looked fantastic. And I think we want shares of that thing. And then I'll throw Jalen Reagor in there as well. Really impressive, like a very impressive preseason. He had a mostly miserable rookie year, caught all 6 of his targets again after a highlight filled preseason. So Reagor suddenly getting moderately interesting.
Shepard's a guy I feel like in any medium league should have already been drafted. And even some of the shallow leagues, I thought he had possibility to be rostered. It's really fallen well for him because Evan Engram hurt. Kenny Golladay got almost nothing out of him this summer, and he admitted, look, it's going to take time. Barkley, of course, Saquon Barkley was not anywhere close to 100%. And I think Adrian Peterson ruined the ACL return timetable expectations for people.
How about it?
Adrian Peterson had a season that just doesn't make medical sense. And now everybody else comes back. I'm like, well, maybe he'll be Adrian Peterson. Well, you know, Barkley's an unbelievable player, and it'd be fun to watch him play at the peak of his powers. But I think we got to be realistic about it. And they handled him with kid gloves, and he really didn't show much when he played. Shepard already has. Shepard's the one player. I can't think of anybody else in the Giants where you think, you know, Danny Jones seems to really click with this guy. I don't feel that way about Jones and anybody else, but him and Shepard, maybe Darius Slayton to a lesser degree, but I think Shepard has a great chance to lead this team in receptions if he can just stay in the field. That's, of course, always been the bugaboo with him. But I really like that player, and I want you to make a proactive bid on him. You outlined everything perfectly with Beasley. There are ancillary things about him that push back his ADP to a point that he was a comical value for the last 2 or 3 weeks of draft season because people had, you know, semi-legitimate reasons for walking away from him. But he's the target machine. He's a target monster. And, you know, Josh Allen did not play well yesterday. We have to give a lot of that credit to a Pittsburgh defense that's one of the 2 or 3 best in football. I don't think there's that many defenses you got to worry about in the NFL, but that Pittsburgh is one of them. So I give them a pass for that. Cole Beasley should certainly be rostered aggressively. And I'm looking for a way to get invested in this Arizona offense because I think Kyler Murray might be ready to make a leap this year as a passer. And I'd want a piece of that. And, you know, you said, look, Tim Patrick, right? He was a weekly staple last year. We kept talking about him. People, for the most part, kept ignoring it. And I get it. He didn't have a high upside, but he sure caught a lot of touchdowns. I look at this Denver receiver room, right, where they get Sutton back, although he didn't really do anything. Jeudy looked like he was ready for a breakout year. Now that's on ice for a while. But they still have Patrick. They still have Hamler. I mean, imagine if some of these guys were migrated over to the Chiefs. Imagine the Chiefs could just take KJ Hamler or Tim Patrick. Yep. I mean, the Chiefs right now are all about two guys, two unbelievable Hall of Fame guys tied to their quarterback. But, you know, they probably whiffed on Hardman. They have a bunch of receivers who are Jags. Maybe CEH is a Jag too. Mike Salfino, my breakfast table colleague, was talking about what if they had drafted DK Metcalf, right? What if they had drafted DeAndre Swift? Think about that'd be the best offense in league history. Instead, it's all about three guys, and they're still pretty close to the best offense in league history.
It's funny. They almost have a Tim Patrick sized hole in the offense, which is a weird thing to say about Kansas City, right? Because they're such a great offense generally. But man, like a 6'4", like they don't need another Tyreek Hill. You don't need somebody who's just a vague impression of Tyreek Hill, which is what they have in Hardman. They could use that 6'4" body.
Shout out to Rich Rebar, who pointed out that when they drafted Hardman, there were some things going on with Hill's career where they weren't sure if Hill was coming back. So I thought it's possible they viewed Hardman as, okay, what if we don't have Hill? We want that speed guy, take the top off a defense guy. But man, if they had a physical, even if they had kind of like a peak Jamison Crowder, I think that would really fit that offense nicely. But they don't seem to have that guy right now. Shepard's my priority. Cole Beasley is certainly a proactive guy. And then you can squint and see the upside of one of the Denver guys, one of the Arizona guys. I'm still going to be more of a, I'll believe it when I see more of it from Rager. I'm not going to go after him progressively or proactively. So he'll probably end up on somebody else's roster. I feel like there's crowding there and there's better talent that's already ahead of him in the pecking order. And I'm still not ready to say that Hurts is going to be a good enough distributor with his passing game that he can get a bunch of people involved in it. So Rager, I'm not going to go after proactively, but there's some good options here that people can address for their wide receiver room. Also, Aguilar, I'd rather have Jacoby Myers in this offense. I'd rather have the tight ends in this offense. So he would be somebody, unless you were in a very deep league, I'd probably just skip over.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I think you're right about Rager's spot in the receiving hierarchy there. It was an encouraging game, though, after an encouraging preseason. The guy that I'm almost infatuated with is Rondale Moore, in part because I watch so much Big Ten football, right? That's probably part of it. He was so good a few years ago. Like, he was so ridiculously good. And then I feel like we're seeing a version of that guy again. His one of the most, it wasn't a scoring play, so it didn't make a lot of highlight reels, but man, he took a little wide receiver screen from Kyler Murray and just freaking exploded for a 20 plus yard game. He's just one of those guys who has great speed. He's got 4.3 or sub 4.3 speed, and it translates immediately onto the field. Like, you can see that he is much quicker and he is much faster than the people around him. So he was really fun. And that was without even really playing. Like, he only played about 20 snaps and he had this sort of great improvised big gain with Murray. And then he had the screen. Eventually, they're going to, I assume, again, this depends on coaching and a lot of things, but I assume they're going to give him a handful of carries because that, you know, he was just a miracle worker in terms of short range touches at the collegiate level. And I think he can do that in this offense as well. So I think as he begins to play a few more snaps, we're going to love him.
I like players who identify themselves where, like, I think back to when Tavon Austin was an early NFL pick. And you could watch a game and not know, wait, which one was the number 9 pick overall in the draft? Because which guy is that? I feel like if you didn't know which player Rondale Moore was, you just knew they had a guy like Rondale Moore and what his basic description was, he would immediately identify himself. You're watching the game on mute. You'd be like, that must be Rondale Moore. That's the guy they're talking about. He identifies himself by the way he played on the field. So I think that's a great call. And as obviously, you know, he was a tremendous Big Ten player and just one of those Purdue, right? I'm just a splashy, just one of those guys. Every time he touches the ball, you get excited.
No one depends on a podcast for breaking news, but we actually have news that is breaking for us as we record this on a Monday afternoon. Thanks to producer John dropping in the fact that Raheem Mostert apparently going to go on IR. Expected to miss as many as 8 weeks. It's torn knee cartilage. That is obviously bad news. It's not a season ender. It's a knee injury that's not a season ender. So I guess it's not exactly the worst case scenario, but
it's a fantasy season ender. You have to turn your back. Yes. On, unless you have unlimited IR spots, you can't prioritize any kind of keeping it most.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely goes without saying that that you have to drop a player who's going to miss multiple months unless they're, you know, I don't know, Christian McCaffrey quality. There's very few players that you're going to hold for 2 months because that's almost your entire fantasy regular season.
What a shame, because I love Raheem Mostert, too. He's one of my favorite players, too. I hate to see that, but.
Yeah, so this does, you know, if you're a disappointed manager with Trey Sermon on a roster, this probably gives you some hope that he can obviously ascend the depth chart a little bit and make something of a season that has not started out particularly well. But yeah, it's going to be perhaps a couple of months for Raheem Mostert. rough news. Hate to see it happen again. He was just going to absolutely blow up in week one. He would have had at least the week that Mitchell did. So for now, that really solidifies, I think, Mitchell as the priority. Not that he wasn't already, but I think it solidifies Mitchell as the priority on the waiver wire, at least at that spot. Let's move to quarterback, where we had, man, this is another really, this is another injury that I don't even want to talk about. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick suffering a hip injury is just, man, he was set up so well. That receiving core is so fun. Antonio Gibson is out there catching passes. They've got McLaurin. They've got Thomas. Like, it's a fun team. Got a fun rookie in De'Ami Brown. Curtis Samuel eventually comes back. That was going to be a thing. Like, this was, I don't know. I was excited to see what we got from Ryan Fitzpatrick this year. And now he's got a hip injury that's going to cost him multiple weeks, pretty clearly. It's our old playoff friend, Taylor Heinicke, is going to come in for him. He seems to be he seems to have a little bit of a leash, honestly. Like, it's not like there's so many exciting players out there. Cam Newton's out there, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon. So we're going to get the Taylor Heinicke experience again, but I'm burying the lead at quarterback because Jameis Winston is still available in over 50% of Yahoo leagues, which is not totally surprising because most Yahoo leagues are one QB setups. He had a crazy stat line that we literally never see. He passed for fewer than 150 yards and somehow threw 5 touchdown passes. One of them was basically one of those extended handoffs to Alvin Kamara, but whatever, they all count. Coupled to Juwan Johnson, that was good to see. Had the deep ball to Deontay Harris. So fun game for Jameis. Other guys that I think we can add if we're in particularly deep formats, Ben Roethlisberger is out there everywhere. It was a sloppy game, right? It was a bit of a defensive struggle, but he's still the guy who's tied to Claypool and Johnson and Smith-Schuster. So it's a great receiving core. He took, I don't know, I guess I would say that game script looked a little bit like, or the depth of passing in that game looked a little bit like last year. But most of the beat reporters covering the team have suggested that his arm appears a little stronger this offseason. And I thought the deep balls looked fine. There weren't a ton of them, but I thought they looked fine. Tyrod Taylor had a day for Houston. And if Houston can be frisky at all, if they can be that 5 or 6 win team that you're talking about, you know, they get a division schedule that's full of friendly defenses. He might get a little bit interesting. He's got a rushing upside. And then Teddy Bridgewater had a day as well, as did Sam Darnold against his former team with a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. He's got that super friendly schedule ahead. So prioritize all these guys for us.
You know, Winston, I'm worried about Winston being a trap. When he throws, when the volume is so low, but you get all those touchdowns, it's just such a hard way to do your business. The game flowed a certain way. I still can't shake the idea that we're not far away from Jameis Winston throwing 3 interceptions and Taysom Hill playing the second half of a game. And the other thing too with Winston is Taysom Hill is always getting in the football field at some point. And that's a new thing that we have, right? I mean, Winston played, but Taysom Hill played. Andy Dalton played, but Fields played. The Niners used both of their quarterbacks. They had a Trey Lance package, and Lance got in on a touchdown. So what could have been a blow-up game for Garoppolo downgraded to just an okay game, but not a great game. Teams don't mind doing that, and we have to be mindful of it. I thought Roethlisberger looked very old in that game, which, of course, he's. I've said all season that he's not on the back nine of his career. I think he's on the 18th hole, probably approaching the 18th hole. I still think they want to win with it, what is a great defense. When your team dominates a football game against Josh Allen, who's like the second MVP favorite right now in the betting markets, we know the Steelers have a great defense, but you know, to do that at Buffalo, I thought was one of the most impressive things that I saw all weekend. I think Roethlisberger is going to be more of a game manager and somebody they try to hide some game scripts. And albeit, you know, you're right, his offensive talent around him is fantastic. He's not somebody I'm that excited about. You know, if Bridgewater still had Judy, because I think Bridgewater and Judy just, they became peanut butter and jelly awfully quick. I think Judy was headed. I'm so depressed. I thought Judy was going to catch 95 passes. I thought he was going to have a terrific season. He was a great price 2 months ago. He was even, I thought, still reasonably priced most of the draft season until the very end of it. And even then, I was tempted to take him because I just believe in him so much. And, you know, the high ankle sprain, who knows? I mean, that can be 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I still like Bridgewater. I'd like him a lot more if Judy were on the field. Sam Darnold, I like to say that he's younger than Joe Burrow. That's going to be true for the rest of his career. He had everything go possibly wrong that could. You know, we've all made the Adam Gase jokes, but all, you know, he got mono. Who gets mono? He had a bunch of things go wrong. And now look at what he has in Carolina, where DJ Moore, monster game. Robbie Anderson only made one play, but if you're going to make one play, make it a long touchdown. And Christian McCaffrey, this is maybe my favorite stat. I forget who mentioned this first on Twitter, so I apologize. Christian McCaffrey is currently the number one in fantasy this week at running back without scoring a touchdown. The last time that happened was 2019, also done by C. McCaffrey. That just shows you how unfair that guy is, where he doesn't even get into the end zone and you have fantasy royalty on that team. So what does Sam Darnold finally have? A bunch of unbelievable pieces. The only negative thing I can say about the Panthers is for some reason, 4th and 6 at the Jets 33 in the first half, they punted. I don't know why you would ever do that. Kick a field goal, go for it, do something. A 15-yard punt is not the answer. So I've talked myself into Darnold. I see the case for Bridgewater. Again, these are going to be second quarterbacks, right? You're not hitching your wagon to any of these guys. I'd also like to see if Heinicke, there's different opinions on Heinicke. A lot of people are just like, oh, he's a journeyman, he can't play. We used to kind of say that about Fitzpatrick. They were asking Fitzpatrick to be the best side of his journeyman self. Heinicke was the one quarterback who scared Tampa Bay in the playoffs. You know, they handled Rodgers and Breeze, and man, they handled Patrick Mahomes in part because of that Kansas City offensive line. Heinicke was the guy who really threw a scare into them. I don't see why he can't be 90% of Fitzpatrick. I think that's in play. We still, as you mentioned, they have three dynamic skill position players. And eventually, if they get Samuel back, maybe they have four of those guys. I still think Washington can win that division. And I think Heinicke can be okay. Remember last year, they won the division somehow without quarterback play that was any good because Haskins was terrible. Alex Smith was an amazing comeback story, but he didn't have much left. Kyle Allen is really just a career backup. I think Heinicke might be okay. I wish he had more time to prepare for a Thursday night game against the Giants defense. That's pretty good. But I'm not panicking. If I have shares of Gibson, McLaurin, Thomas, any of the main guys in that WFT offense, I still think they're probably going to be close to what you expected from them before the season.
Another, I alluded to it, but another point about Sam Darnold, we got to look at the schedule, right? Like, and it's rough next week. They get the Saints, and the Saints defense obviously just shut down Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. So there's something there. So fine. You want to duck him against the Saints. That's okay. But then it's Houston, it's Dallas, it's the Eagles, it's the Vikings who just got shredded by the Bengals passing attack. It's the Giants. It's Atlanta. It's like it's friendly for the first 2 months of the season, more or less. So Darnold was always one of those guys for me where if you wanted to take a shot with, you know, basically all leagues where I've taken a shot with either Trey Lance or Justin Fields and you knew you were going to have to wait for him.
Right.
Darnold is one of those pieces that I like to plug in September and October. And by the time those guys are ready to go and they're under center full time for their teams, hopefully I've had a handful of good weeks with Darnold and it started off well.
You mentioned Fields and Lance. Let me ask you this. If you're in a super flex league or a league where non-starting quarterbacks or upside quarterbacks down the road have value, would you rather be sitting on Fields right now or Lance right now?
It's a good question. I feel like this pivoted for me as we got into August, as we got deeper into August. I had Lance ahead of him. And I had some like July drafts in which I'd sort of built it around the idea of having Lance and then I'll have a plug and play quarterback for a month or so. It just now seems to me, and it began to tilt this way, I think in late August, that we're going to continue to see this sort of combo Lance Garoppolo situation for a while. And the Niners have a relatively friendly early season schedule. There's just not a lot of losses there for the Niners. And who knows, it was kind of a Pyrrhic victory against Detroit and they have some injuries and who knows how any season is going to go. But as I was trying to plot it out, I see the opportunity for Justin Fields to take over immediately. The town is screaming for it. The city is absolutely screaming for it. Twitter was screaming for it last night. I'm going to have a difficult time imagining Andy Dalton going much farther beyond the Cincinnati game. Like I also couldn't believe, this is a little mini rant, but I couldn't believe that the Bears had a situation where they were down 3 scores late in that game, a couple minutes to go, and they don't put Justin Fields in for those reps. Like, what are we even doing here? But we got to get to the Justin Fields era soon. I can't believe that we're not there already. He completed both of his throws. You know, they gave him some simple stuff. Mm-hmm. One of them was just an absolute garbage play, but they gave him some simple stuff, simple reads. He completed both of his throws. He rushed for a touchdown. Like, you got to get that kid ready. You already made the decision when you drafted him. And the same is true of Lance. You fundamentally already made the decision about who your future quarterback is going to be. We just gotta land this plane and get there. So that's a very long way of saying that that I think Fields is a starter before Lance is a starter. I think they have similar upside. I'm very confident in Fields being a fantasy asset.
And this is a prove it year for Matt Nagy. He doesn't, you know, this is his last spin probably. So he needs to make something happen. I think it's a case where you measure multiple times and then you cut once. So when you finally cut, you make the change decisively. I just wanted to mention one other quarterback really quick. I was, even though they didn't win the game, I was very impressed with Mac Jones's accuracy, his decision-making, and specifically, if you get a chance to rewatch this game, his pocket awareness, his movement, his ability to be around bodies in the pocket and move to the quiet space where he can actually make a throw and functionally step into the throw. I want to be careful the way I say this. It reminded me of a young Tom Brady. Doesn't mean he's going to be Tom Brady, but he reminded me of like Tom Brady 2001, Tom Brady 2002, where it's like, oh, wow, he does a lot of intangible things right. He's accurate. He's smart. He makes good decisions. You feel like he's not going to submarine the offense. I think they found their quarterback for the next 10 years in Mac Jones. Now, maybe he'll be Andy Dalton good. Maybe he'll be Joe Flacco good. You know, maybe he'll just be something like that. But I was really impressed with just the way he handled himself, and the moment never looked too big for him. I still think the Patriots should have won that game, but I think they made the right pick with Jones. I also think letting Cam Newton go is probably the smartest move for the organization. Just make it clear. Don't confuse anybody. Don't have factions in the locker room. I think Mac Jones is here to be a very solid player, if not maybe a very good player, for the next several years.
Man, did he ever answer post-game questions in that sort of robotic Belichickian tone that, like, you can just tell he's right for that team. And certainly after the stages that he's played on as a collegiate quarterback, there's no stage that's too big for him now. He was clearly very comfortable. I will also say I was as somebody who had a lot of doubt about Zach Wilson and the spot that he went in the draft and his I thought he was a very difficult player to evaluate coming out of college because he just had an ocean of space around him against almost every opponent they played, right? And those guys can fool me. That guy's got a live arm. That guy's got a really good arm. He made some throws. Like, it wasn't perfect. None of the rookie quarterbacks are perfect, but that guy's got an arm.
Oh, certainly good arm talent. The only thing worries me about him is he was getting hit or rushed on or pressured just about on every drop back. Mm-hmm. And the Jets just lost the one pillar of their offensive line. They can't lose Becton. Their cornerstone tackle is going to miss several weeks. But if nothing else, the fantasy takeaway there is I am bullish on Wilson long term. But as somebody who has a lot of investment in Corey Davis, I need Wilson to be good enough just to sustain enough offense and for them to have, you know, a 20, 22, 24 touchdown pass season. So hopefully, you know, maybe 10 of those can go to Corey Davis. I feel very confident Corey Davis will outkick his coverage. And I think Zach Wilson was the right pick for the Jets.
Tell me quickly if anybody interested you at the tight end position. Juwan Johnson with a couple of touchdowns from Jameis. Cole Kmet at least saw a bunch of targets. They were pretty uninteresting short range Andy Dalton targets, but whatever, he was targeted. Jared Cook had a nice little game in terms of workload, at least. Any other names jump out to you? I think of it as a position where obviously if you drafted a top six guy, which is the way I think many of us preferred to operate, if you drafted a top six guy, you're set. And if you drafted anybody else, they're totally replaceable. There's not many people beyond that first six. You know, I guess I'd throw Fant and Higbee and Logan Thomas, a couple of others in there, but almost everybody else is droppable, right? If you drafted Mike Gesicki and didn't get anything out of him in opening week, I'm not gonna pin my hopes to Mike Gesicki. I'm just gonna move on.
Right, or Hunter Henry or something like that. I do think we might have a renaissance Gronkowski year coming, and I was really encouraged by how much they used Higbee. I think all the people who got burnt by Higbee last year, if they went back to him, I think they're going to be really happy with that. The tough thing about tight end is Juwan Johnson scored two touchdowns, but Troutman was on the field more, ran more routes, and this is a chicken-egg thing. Like, one of the touchdowns Juwan Johnson scored was a pick play at the goal line where he ends up wide open in the corner of the end zone because the other receiver has taken out, basically bowling balled, to use Doug Farrar's phrase, two of the defenders. This is a touchdown for anybody in the NFL. I also point out Jameis Winston almost overthrew his tight end in the corner of the end zone, as Jameis Winston is wont to do. But Johnson's a major, just like every tight end, these guys are unbelievable athletes, right? I mean, so many of them come from basketball backgrounds. They were power forwards and stuff like that. but I don't know how much of a snap share, a route share we can count on. The good thing is that when he's going to be on the field, I think we're going to have a lot of games where it's like, oh, wow, Johnson only played 18 snaps. And then somebody else can say, yeah, but he was targeted at the goal line three times. And that's where the money is, right? That's where the cheddar is. I think he could maybe be a poor man's Tonyan, where he only gets like 57 targets, but he scores 8 touchdowns. I think that's in the realm of possibility. Cole Kmet is somebody I want to say to you, just draft him next year. There's a breakout season coming for Kmet. A lot of times it's the third year for tight ends. He's going to be a dynamic player, but I just want to get Jimmy Graham out of this city. I want to wait until Fields maybe has time to grow into the role. Kmet, we're going to see the signs. You're going to think to yourself, I know what's coming for this guy. Kind of like the way we felt about Fant and maybe Hockenson this year, third year tight end breakout. Yeah. I feel like Kmet, maybe not quite to the upside of those guys. Draft him next year. This year, he's going to be kind of a hit or miss player. Cook has just gotten a little bit too old for me to really take seriously. He just changed teams. I know he's been really good in his 30s. He was a lot more effective with the Saints than anybody had a reason to expect. Bottom line, I hope you found, whether it was the Vanity tight end, whether it was a Higbee, whether it was a Thomas, whether it was a Gronkowski, I hope you found one of those guys, because I don't think it's the greatest week. I think the Johnson thing could be a trap, even though I think he will score a handful of touchdowns. I just don't think he has any volume upside. Komet's a year away, and Cook's just a little bit too old. So I'm hoping you don't need to go shopping here.
One thing we did last year on this pod is we always wrapped it by talking about players. You know, we spend the better part of an hour talking about players that you want to add. Oftentimes in fantasy, we don't give you a corresponding drop, so we always try to do that. Give me a player who's on a bunch of rosters right now that you are entirely willing to drop.
Yeah, I don't know if I want a bunch of rosters, but I saw Ramondre Stevenson's probably on a quarter owned, 30% owned in Yahoo, something like that. And if they're thinking of fumble shaming Harris, who's their best back, what does it say of Stevenson, who had, what, one or two carries and is basically mothballed to, you know, Lawrence Maroney Island? J.J. Taylor had a good camp, man. J.J. Taylor can play. We know White will always have some role in this offense. I think they're eventually going to let Harris out of the doghouse because he's just too talented not to play. I realize that with these running backs like Stevenson, you're just looking for a plausible upside lottery ticket. I would just say, okay, well, let's switch that lottery ticket to Kenneth Gainwell or Tony Jones or one of the Baltimore running backs, which we didn't talk about a lot. I'm hoping Tyson Williams has a big game tonight, but obviously they've invested in some veterans too. Your lottery ticket should go to somebody else. I don't think Stevenson should be that guy anymore.
Yeah, listen, the guy I'll throw out there, I had him in a couple of leagues, and I'm still racked with guilt over recommending him to somebody on Twitter who asked a question about a couple of fringy receivers. Is Russell Gage. The Atlanta's performance was jarring. I thought in a game where I expected it to be back and forth, and I expected a significant total from both teams, and maybe some of it is the Eagles' defense, but I kind of doubt it. It was super disappointing. Matt Ryan finishes with only 164 passing yards. Kyle Pitts was relatively quiet, although he saw 8 targets in the game. So I feel okay about him. Obviously, we feel okay about Ridley. But man, Russell Gage, 2 targets, no catches. That's an easy drop for me because you only had Russell Gage on the roster for floor. It's not like you ever expected a, you know, 170-yard, 2 touchdown game from Russell Gage. The whole thing, the thinking there was, okay, maybe I'm in a PPR league and I just want a guy who can give me, you know, I've got multiple flex spots to fill. Just give me 6 catches and 60 yards. That's all I need. Surely you can do it. Well, he didn't. He didn't do that. He didn't come close to it. And again, only 2 targets. I'm sure there's going to be a Russell Gage game somewhere down the line where he catches 7 balls and it's 75 yards. But I'm not going to feel burned by that. If his floor is a 0, he has no place on your roster.
Yeah, I think he can be a false positive when he has that big game. And also, we didn't mention him in the tight ends. I feel like, I don't know if this is really of use unless you're in a very deep league, but I think the Falcons are going to find 67 catches for Hayden Hurst. He's going to have like that 67, 545, 4 touchdown, 5 touchdown season. So that will probably be talking Hayden Hurst during bye weeks after some major tight end unfortunately gets hurt or something. It's not going to be there's not an upside here because he can't be Calvin Ridley. And, you know, Kyle Pitts.
Right.
The good news with Kyle Pitts, if you have Kyle Pitts, is he got all the snaps you want. You get all the routes run that you want. It just didn't work out. I still think Arthur Smith is a good coach. And the Falcons defense is going to be so bad that maybe they'll have some games like the Lions had yesterday where the Falcons get boat raced But Matt Ryan threw 57 passes and everybody goes home happy. But I agree, even with that, Russell Gage is somebody you can't carry right now.
Oh, what a nice note to end on. A little note of hopefulness for Atlanta fans, kind of, sort of, or at least Atlanta fantasy investors. That is going to do it for our first pickups pod of the season. We're in it. This was fun. Charles Robinson is joined by Frank Schwab to recap all 14 of Sunday's games in the latest episode of You Pod to Win the Game. So please check that out. Look for it on your podcast platform of choice. Huge thanks to Scott for joining me, for producer John. I'm at Andy Behrens on Twitter. That right there is at Scott_Pianowski. You can check us out on Twitter, generally, the whole fantasy team at Yahoo Fantasy. Scott will be back tomorrow with Frank Schwab for the betting preview episode of this year podcast. Until then, we are out.